Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One. Our tour of the cave houses today has really got me thinking. Would you ever consider a cave as your permanent residence?
Why not? Our tour guide said cave houses are quiet, as rocks and stones provide a natural layer of sound insulation. I hate the hustle and bustle of the city, so buying a cave as a home might not be a bad idea at all.
But there's so little daylight in cave houses. Surely you would miss it.
Probably. But caves are really ecological. They don't need cooling in the summer and they stay warm in the winter, so you can also save money.
Well, they might be good as holiday accommodation, but in a permanent house, I need the latest technology.
Really, you sound like one would be stepping back into the Stone Age. In the cave we visited, they had all the modern conveniences, even Wi-Fi.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Our tour of the cave houses today has really got me thinking. Would you ever consider a cave as your permanent residence?
Why not? Our tour guide said cave houses are quiet, as rocks and stones provide a natural layer of sound insulation. I hate the hustle and bustle of the city, so buying a cave as a home might not be a bad idea at all.
But there's so little daylight in cave houses. Surely you would miss it.
Probably. But caves are really ecological. They don't need cooling in the summer and they stay warm in the winter, so you can also save money.
Well, they might be good as holiday accommodation, but in a permanent house, I need the latest technology.
Really, you sound like one would be stepping back into the Stone Age. In the cave we visited, they had all the modern conveniences, even Wi-Fi.
Two. The UK Met Office is cautioning that we can expect extreme weather to arrive over the next few days. With temperatures of 40 degrees Celsius and high humidity, it will feel like 47 degrees Celsius, and potential health effects are being compared to those of the deadly heatwave of 2003. The Department of Health has announced that ambulances will be on standby to deal with the expected increase in the number of emergency calls. In many cities, extra drinking fountains are also being installed. TV and radio stations are already broadcasting information about the risks of heat-related illnesses. You are advised to remain inside as much as possible.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
The UK Met Office is cautioning that we can expect extreme weather to arrive over the next few days. With temperatures of 40 degrees Celsius and high humidity, it will feel like 47 degrees Celsius, and potential health effects are being compared to those of the deadly heatwave of 2003. The Department of Health has announced that ambulances will be on standby to deal with the expected increase in the number of emergency calls. In many cities, extra drinking fountains are also being installed. TV and radio stations are already broadcasting information about the risks of heat-related illnesses. You are advised to remain inside as much as possible. 3.
I love blackcurrant juice. You can buy it easily in Britain, but I couldn't find it in supermarkets anywhere during a recent trip to the US. It seemed strange, so I asked my friends who live in Washington why this is so. They explained that importing blackcurrants into the US was prohibited at the beginning of the 20th century because they carried a disease which attacked white pine trees. I had never heard about it before. For the same reason, the cultivation of blackcurrants was banned in the USA, and they are not planted in American gardens. However, imported blackcurrant juice or jam is sometimes available in the US, mainly from specialist food stores.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
I love blackcurrant juice. You can buy it easily in Britain, but I couldn't find it in supermarkets anywhere during a recent trip to the US. It seemed strange, so I asked my friends who live in Washington why this is so. They explained that importing blackcurrants into the US was prohibited at the beginning of the 20th century because they carried a disease which attacked white pine trees. I had never heard about it before. For the same reason, the cultivation of blackcurrants was banned in the USA, and they are not planted in American gardens. However, imported blackcurrant juice or jam is sometimes available in the US, mainly from specialist food stores.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One. I live in a small village in a mountainous region. Once a lorry carrying fresh watermelons got stuck in a narrow street between two houses. The driver had blindly followed the directions given by his GPS navigation system and ignored the maximum size and weight restrictions displayed along the road. When he tried to turn down into the village, the bend was too tight and the lorry got stuck. He couldn't reverse back up the steep hill either, so other cars couldn't pass in any way for a few hours. Drivers were surely not too happy, but the locals didn't mind too much because everyone got a few watermelons for free. Two.
It's understandable that when driving abroad as a tourist, you may confuse names with complicated spellings, or take what is obviously the wrong road by blindly following the directions given by your GPS device. What I can't understand is why professional drivers allow themselves to be misled by their devices. Last year in my seaside town, a lorry driver took a wrong turn, as directed by his GPS navigation system, and ended up on a promenade leading to the Sea Life Centre. The driver panicked, lost control of the vehicle, and crashed into the entrance of the centre. The main door and front windows were destroyed, and the entrance hall was a total mess. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but the centre was closed for repairs for a few months.
Three. My friend relied on his satellite navigation system so much that he almost had a terrible accident in his beloved Mini Cooper. One day, when he was travelling in West Yorkshire, his GPS device directed him along a dirt track, which began to get steeper and increasingly narrow, but he kept on going. The device showed the track as a proper road, and my friend just trusted it. He only realised how wrong he was when the track ended suddenly, and he drove through a thin wire fence and stopped just a few inches from a 100-foot drop. He got out safely, but it took emergency services several hours to get the car back to the nearest road. He was fined for driving without due care and attention. Four.
I heard a story about a woman who agreed to pick up a friend from a seaside resort. As she had no clue where the place was, she entered its name into her GPS device and followed the directions. Unfortunately, the navigation took her to a completely different destination, much further away from her home in Belgium. The drive took her the whole day. She got a little anxious when the language of road signs changed, but she drove on. She finally realized that something was wrong when she saw the sign for Zagreb, the Croatian capital. It turned out that she had mistyped the name of her destination when she was setting off.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1. I live in a small village in a mountainous region. Once a lorry carrying fresh watermelons got stuck in a narrow street between two houses. The driver had blindly followed the directions given by his GPS navigation system and ignored the maximum size and weight restrictions displayed along the road. When he tried to turn down into the village, the bend was too tight and the lorry got stuck. He couldn't reverse back up the steep hill either, so other cars couldn't pass in any way for a few hours. Drivers were surely not too happy, but the locals didn't mind too much because everyone got a few watermelons for free. Two.
It's understandable that when driving abroad as a tourist, you may confuse names with complicated spellings, or take what is obviously the wrong road by blindly following the directions given by your GPS device. What I can't understand is why professional drivers allow themselves to be misled by their devices. Last year in my seaside town, a lorry driver took a wrong turn, as directed by his GPS navigation system, and ended up on a promenade leading to the Sea Life Centre. The driver panicked, lost control of the vehicle, and crashed into the entrance of the centre. The main door and front windows were destroyed, and the entrance hall was a total mess. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but the centre was closed for repairs for a few months.
Three. My friend relied on his satellite navigation system so much that he almost had a terrible accident in his beloved Mini Cooper. One day, when he was travelling in West Yorkshire, his GPS device directed him along a dirt track, which began to get steeper and increasingly narrow, but he kept on going. The device showed the track as a proper road, and my friend just trusted it. He only realised how wrong he was when the track ended suddenly, and he drove through a thin wire fence and stopped just a few inches from a 100-foot drop. He got out safely, but it took emergency services several hours to get the car back to the nearest road. He was fined for driving without due care and attention. Four.
I heard a story about a woman who agreed to pick up a friend from a seaside resort. As she had no clue where the place was, she entered its name into her GPS device and followed the directions. Unfortunately, the navigation took her to a completely different destination, much further away from her home in Belgium. The drive took her the whole day. She got a little anxious when the language of road signs changed, but she drove on. She finally realized that something was wrong when she saw the sign for Zagreb, the Croatian capital. It turned out that she had mistyped the name of her destination when she was setting off.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today we're talking to a top British chef, Heston Blumenthal. Heston, what flavour or taste do you remember most from your childhood?
Well, there was an ice cream shop in the street near to where we lived. It was run by two Sicilians. They only made a few flavours, but each one was amazing. When, in later years, I looked back to my childhood, I felt sure that my favourite ice cream had been their delicious creamy vanilla with a hint of coffee in it, served in a cone. I later read somewhere that adding whole coffee beans to the base mix while making ice cream is a technique which enriches the vanilla flavour. So I concluded that I had discovered their secret. But in 2000, I invited those Sicilian ice cream geniuses onto my TV programme and had a chance to taste their legendary vanilla ice cream in a cone once again. And it was completely different from what I expected. And then, in a flash, it came to me that it hadn't actually been vanilla with a hint of coffee in a cone that I'd loved, but half vanilla and half coffee in a tub. It proves that we can't always rely on our memories, however vivid they may be.
What experience had the most influence on your approach to cooking?
When I was 16, my father took us to a 2-star Michelin restaurant in Provence. The sun was setting, and there was this beautiful fragrance of lavender all over the place. Then, after dark, the place suddenly lit up, and it looked like a woodland scene from a fairy tale.
What about the food?
It was excellent. The leg of lamb wrapped in a thin layer of pastry was really juicy, and the dessert was just heavenly.
Can you explain how this experience influenced you?
The impact of that dinner in Provence was immediate. I became fascinated with the great chefs of France and started to study their cookbooks in detail. I cooked obsessively at home, but also spent all my money on eating out to sample new dishes. I wanted to create the same magic, just like the owners of the restaurant in Provence. One day I stumbled upon a recipe for Parmesan ice cream and decided to try it out. The taste was incredible. I realized that I had to get rid of my preconceptions about food and cooking and risk combinations of ingredients which weren't obvious. But I also became aware that working in other people's kitchens, like I did at the time, would not allow me to be as adventurous in my cooking as I would love to. So in 1995, I opened my own restaurant.
Have you seen any changes in the British food culture over the decades?
I remember that when I was a kid, there was only one kind of pasta you could buy, and that was spaghetti. But between then and now, food has exploded in Britain. In any town or city, you can nowadays find restaurants serving food from different corners of the world. The quality of ingredients has improved. The number of local cheesemakers has significantly grown, And the variety of food-related programs on TV has encouraged us to try more exotic dishes. Food festivals have also played their role in popularizing new tastes. Mention crab ice cream now, and many people are eager to try it, but when I made it years ago, people were really suspicious.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today we're talking to a top British chef, Heston Blumenthal. Heston, what flavour or taste do you remember most from your childhood?
Well, there was an ice cream shop in the street near to where we lived. It was run by two Sicilians. They only made a few flavours, but each one was amazing. When, in later years, I looked back to my childhood, I felt sure that my favourite ice cream had been their delicious creamy vanilla with a hint of coffee in it, served in a cone. I later read somewhere that adding whole coffee beans to the base mix while making ice cream is a technique which enriches the vanilla flavour. So I concluded that I had discovered their secret. But in 2000, I invited those Sicilian ice cream geniuses onto my TV programme, and had a chance to taste their legendary vanilla ice cream in a cone once again. And it was completely different from what I expected. And then, in a flash, it came to me that it hadn't actually been vanilla with a hint of coffee in a cone that I'd loved, but half vanilla and half coffee in a tub. It proves that we can't always rely on our memories, however vivid they may be.
What experience had the most influence on your approach to cooking?
When I was 16, my father took us to a two-star Michelin restaurant in Provence. The sun was setting, and there was this beautiful fragrance of lavender all over the place. Then, after dark, the place suddenly lit up, and it looked like a woodland scene from a fairy tale.
What about the food?
It was excellent. The leg of lamb wrapped in a thin layer of pastry was really juicy, and the dessert was just heavenly.
Can you explain how this experience influenced you?
The impact of that dinner in Provence was immediate. I became fascinated with the great chefs of France and started to study their cookbooks in detail. I cooked obsessively at home, but also spent all my money on eating out to sample new dishes. I wanted to create the same magic, just like the owners of the restaurant in Provence. One day I stumbled upon a recipe for Parmesan ice cream and decided to try it out. The taste was incredible. I realized that I had to get rid of my preconceptions about food and cooking and risk combinations of ingredients which weren't obvious. But I also became aware that working in other people's kitchens, like I did at the time, would not allow me to be as adventurous in my cooking as I would love to. So in 1995, I opened my own restaurant.
Have you seen any changes in the British food culture over the decades?
I remember that when I was a kid, there was only one kind of pasta you could buy, and that was spaghetti. But between then and now, food has exploded in Britain. In any town or city, you can nowadays find restaurants serving food from different corners of the world. The quality of ingredients has improved. The number of local cheesemakers has significantly grown, and the variety of food-related programs on TV has encouraged us to try more exotic dishes. Food festivals have also played their role in popularizing new tastes. Mention crab ice cream now, and many people are eager to try it, but when I made it years ago, people were really suspicious.
czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.